where did you come from? Biologically speaking, the answer is easy. You came from your mother's uterus. But even though this small pear-shaped organ was our original home, most of us know very little about it. In the new book, Womb, The Inside Story of Where We All Began, Leah Hazard tries to correct that. Leah is a practicing midwife and author and podcaster, and she joins us now to share five of her big ideas.
Hi, and thanks for joining me. I'm Leah Hazard, and I'd like to share five insights with you from my book, Womb, The Inside Story of Where We All Began. I thought I knew a lot about the uterus until I started researching the book, and I realized how much I didn't know. In fact, most of us know very little about the organ in which we all began our lives. I hope you can forgive me for my initial overconfidence. After all, in addition to living with a womb for 45 years and growing two children inside it, in my day job, I'm a midwife. Understanding the uterus, monitoring it, managing it, well, it's my bread and butter. But then I took a deep dive into the history of this organ, how we medicate it, legislate it, and celebrate it, and my mind was blown. Maybe yours will be a little bit too. So, here's the first thing you should know. Insight number one. Even when there's no baby inside a womb, it's teeming with life, and that life is crucial to the womb owner's health. Empty wombs are not empty. Until very recently, we're talking within the last 20 years or so, people thought that an empty uterus was empty. This concept, known as the sterile womb paradigm, originated in the early 20th century and was inspired by some pretty weird experiments with newborn baby poop, as well as some extremely old-fashioned ideas about female purity. Now, though, new technologies in tissue sampling and analysis have revealed that far from being sterile and empty, the uterus almost certainly has its own microbiome. An environment full of billions of microorganisms, including bacteria, fungi, viruses, and yeasts. What's more, we think these microorganisms might play a key role in determining a person's gynecological health. An unbalanced microbiome could even influence the development of uterine cancer and other diseases. We already know that the gut microbiome affects gastric conditions such as colitis and Clostridium difficile infections, and that fecal microbiome transplants, basically a transplant of blended feces from a healthy donor to a sick recipient, might be able to improve these conditions. Why not do a similar thing for wombs? If we can sample a person's uterine microbiome, or even alter it in the way we're doing with the gut, we might open up a whole new world of personalized, effective gynecological treatments. Which leads me to my second insight. We're getting gynecology all wrong. Currently, billions of women and people with wombs suffer from painful periods, heavy bleeding, and other devastating symptoms. But it can take many years, with lots of painful, traumatic, and expensive investigations along the way, to diagnose gynecological conditions like endometriosis and fibroids. In addition to the immense personal toll, our inefficiency in diagnosing these conditions has a huge socioeconomic cost too. Millions of dollars in sick days and reduced productivity. What if you could fix these problems by diagnosing diseases using just a pad, a cup or a tampon, and your phone? Scientists have discovered that each person's menstrual blood contains a unique biochemical fingerprint. By collecting that flow in a pad, cup or tampon, we can look for disease markers straight from the source. One biotech company is even looking at sending that analysis straight from your tampon to an app on your phone, which could then generate a health report that goes directly to your doctor. The technology exists, but we're way behind on funding it and rolling it out. Why? That's a whole other story. There's exponentially more research about semen, for example, than there is about menstrual blood. I'll let you draw your own conclusions as to what kind of information is prioritized by funding bodies and why. About that healthcare, let's have a gear change for insight number 3, which is, if you're going to steam your vulva, proceed with caution. Okay, let me rewind a little bit. In addition to visiting a cutting-edge lab in England and observing a womb transplant in Sweden, I, in the name of research, steamed my vulva in the privacy of my own home. Vulval or vaginal steaming, or V-steaming as it's often called, is just one element of the huge womb wellness industry, a growing sector worth millions of dollars. Womb wellness is often touted by glossy, glamorous gurus as a way of using alternative therapies to balance hormones, improve fertility, and so much more. Some people argue that the womb wellness industry is dangerously exploitative, offering potentially harmful miracle cures at great expense to vulnerable people, and often culturally appropriating indigenous practices along the way. But the truth is more nuanced. Many women have become increasingly disillusioned with the mainstream industrial medical complex, whether because of high costs, long waiting times, or poor treatment due to racial and ethnic bias. In the future, reproductive health care must be accessible and effective, but it also has to address the unmet needs of women and other people who've turned to dubious womb wellness treatments in desperation. Why do I say women and other people? Well, that brings me to my 4th insight. Not all women have a womb, and not every person with a womb is a woman. In fact, dudes have wombs too. I'm talking about trans men, some of whom have a hysterectomy as part of a program of gender-affirming surgery, some of whom don't. I'm talking about non-binary people, and I'm even talking about cisgendered men. Take the case of the 37-year-old British man who went to his doctor with genital bleeding, or the 70-year-old Indian man who presented with testicular pain. Each man was found to have a tiny, partially developed uterus that had lain dormant for decades. In the future, the gendered lines between those with wombs and those without will become even blurrier. It's already possible for a woman born without a uterus to receive a donated womb and to grow a fetus inside it. As reproductive technology becomes more advanced, cisgender men might even be able to receive donor wombs too, going on to gestate babies in their own bodies, a prospect with almost unthinkably massive social implications. Watch this space. Finally, insight number 5. The uterus is it. It's the nexus of personal, social, and political choice in every society. It's the most misunderstood, yet most highly legislated organ. Reproductive restrictions and even reproductive violence have been used as tools of oppression since the earliest days of recorded history. In My Body is My Own, a 2021 report from the United Nations, only 55% of women, surveyed in 57 countries, said they were able to make their own decisions about sexual and reproductive health and rights. That's a massive 45% of women who don't have the basic human right of bodily autonomy. When a person with a uterus doesn't have full control over their sexuality, fertility, and reproductive life cycle, that person cannot contribute effectively to a just and equitable society. We urgently need to improve our understanding of the womb, collectively and as individuals. Not only is the womb where we all began, but how we think about it and what we do with it can tell us so much more about where we're going. So, just to remind you about today's key points. Number 1, empty wombs aren't empty. Number 2, we're getting gynecology all wrong. Number 3, if you're steaming your vulva, proceed with caution. Number 4, dudes can have wombs too. And number 5, the uterus is the nexus of choice. Thank you so much for joining me. I've been Leah Hazard, and I hope you'll enjoy Womb, the inside story of where we all began.
Thank you, Leah. That was Leah Hazard with 5 big ideas from Womb, the inside story of where we all began. I'm Rufus Griscom. Thanks for listening.